أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين. السلام عليكم brothers, sisters, and anyone who might listen to this podcast later on. Good to be back. Last week I was not feeling so well, sorry to say, but back now. We're going to continue, inshallah, for I think another four more sessions. So, yeah, Yumus have been kind enough to organise the room for us for another 4 weeks, and then we'll take a break for a while and we'll kick off again next year, inshallah. So I did have a request for a session or a discussion on, what in Islam, what are our obligations to our friends? Yeah, roughly that's how I recall it being phrased. And then around the same time, I remember some of the brothers also mentioned, I had some questions about similar issues, so it is something that, is raised often. So what's expected of us as Muslims, vis-a-vis, our friends. So what does Bedu Zaman have to say on the issue? He doesn't specifically speak about friendship, he doesn't devote a treatise to friendship per se, as far as I know, but he does speak about something that, how can I put it, trumps friendship, is kind of, is primary to friendship, right? What's primary to friendship? What does Allah expect of us as Muslims, vis-a-vis other Muslims? What does Allah expect? He expects ukhuwah, right? So the relevant concept is the concept of ukhuwah. So ukhuwah would be translated roughly as, brotherhood or sisterhood. And that certainly encompasses friendship, that encompasses friendship. So this is the more primary notion. So we'll talk about that. Bedu Zaman's 22nd letter focuses on specifically this, the situation where we fail to have uhuwa for one another, okay? So he describes what that amounts to, okay? So if I regard some Muslim brother or sister as anything other than a threat, other than a friend or other than a brother or sister, if I fail to have the uhuwa for them that Allah expects, what does that really boil down to? What's going on there, spiritually or metaphysically? What does it amount to? He points that out. He points out the folly in that, the mistake in that, to look at another Muslim and to fail to value that person in the right sort of ways. Yeah, he points out the folly in that. And then he has some recommendations or some advice for how to deal with that, okay? Elsewhere, he has a separate conversation, he has a separate treatise in the context of ikhlas, right, on uhuwa, okay? So he speaks about, and we'll talk more about this as we go, but just as by way of introduction, just to understand the gravity of what we're talking about, Bedu Zaman talks about ikhlas and uhuwa in the same breath, a failure to manifest uhuwa, a failure to have brotherhood, sisterhood for one another, amounts to a failure of sincerity, okay? There's no way that you could be, there's no way that you could, for example, salam alaikum, come on. Yeah, let's say I have a dispute with my brother, and I decide to stop liking him or her, and thereby manifest a lack of uhuwa. Or let's say, here's a different manifestation of a lack of uhuwa, envy, right? Yeah, hasad, envy is a big one. If I had that, there's no way that I could engage in that way of, behaving, or there's no way that I could sustain a state of heart like that. Yeah, that's probably the more accurate way to describe it. There's no way that I could sustain a state of heart like that and at the same time really manifest ikhlas, at least in the full sense of the word. Yeah, I couldn't fully be a sincere worshipper if I didn't have uhuwe. Okay, so yeah, he speaks about that separately. What I'll do is I'll read some parts of the 22nd letter, and then, yeah, we might kind of just briefly summarize also what he says there. I might just say a few words because it would be remiss not to. Yeah, but we'll in any case talk more about uhuwe again when we talk about ikhlas, you know, before the end of this final set of sessions, inshallah. So without further ado, let me just pick some bits and pieces to read from this 22nd letter. It's probably a little bit too long to read here in its entirety, but I'm going to pick what I think are the, you know, the most urgent parts. Yeah, what do we need to know most urgently? It's all important, but yeah, I'll pick the most urgent parts to read, and then we'll talk about that, inshallah. Okay. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. He starts off here with a verse from the Quran. Bismihi wa in min shay'in illa yusabbihu bihamdi. In his name, and there is nothing but it glorifies him with praise. In other words, there's nothing that does not glorify Allah with praise. Okay. This letter consists of two topics. The first summons believers to brotherhood, ukhuwa. The English doesn't quite capture it, you know, it sounds a little bit sexist. Yeah, summons believers to uhuwe, okay? So whenever I say uhuwe, you know that I'm talking about brotherhood or sisterhood. Yeah. It summons believers to uhuwe and love, okay? That's what we expect it to have one another, love, nothing less than love. Okay, now there are some verses here rendered in English as follows. First topic, in the name of Allah, the merciful, the compassionate. Verily the believers are brethren, so reconcile then your brothers. Repel evil with what is better than it. Then the one between whom and yourself enmity prevails will become like your friend and intimate. Okay, one more. Those who suppress their anger and forgive people. Verily Allah loves those who do good. Right? Those who do good, the muhsinun, yeah? The muhsinun, those who do good. Okay, so dispute and discord among the believers, partisanship, taking sides, obstinacy, right, stubbornness, envy, leading to rancor and enmity among them, are repugnant and vile, are harmful and sinful, right? It's literally haram, okay? It's literally haram. Right? They are repugnant and vile, harmful and sinful by the combined testimony of wisdom and the supreme humanity that is Islam for personal, social and spiritual life. Okay, so I'll read that again. Dispute and discord among the believers and partisanship, obstinacy and envy leading to rancor and enmity among them are repugnant and vile, are harmful and sinful for the personal, social, and spiritual life, right, of the believers. They are, in short, poison for the life of mankind, humanity. We will set forth six of the extremely numerous aspects of this truth. Okay, we won't read all of them. First aspect, they are sinful in the view of truth. Right, so they're opposed to hakika. O unjust man nurturing rancor and enmity against the believer. Okay, so he's going to say right now, like, so, yeah, listen carefully here. He's going to tell us what it amounts to either hate or not even necessarily just hate, because you might say, hey, I don't, like, you know, hate's a strong word, right? I don't really hate the person in question, but it's just that I don't like them anymore, you know. They've done such and such to me, I don't like them anymore. Yeah, you know, I don't see them as a worthwhile, you know, person to take as a friend, etc., etc. So there's a whole spectrum of this, yeah, you know, a whole spectrum of extents to which I might fail to have, or huwa, fail to value my fellow Muslim brother or sister in the way that they're meant to, yeah? So that could amount to hate, that could amount to just like a dislike, it could amount to a disrespect. So there's a whole spectrum, You know, so just why I point this out straight away, just because you're not like at the extreme end of the spectrum, doesn't mean you let off the hook here. Okay, what's expected, let's say straight away, what's expected is nothing short of, nothing short of a valuing, right, in a certain way, which we'll talk about, right? It's to value your brother and sister. It's to love them in a certain way, okay? Nothing short of that. So anything short of that, whatever its degree, is going to be unacceptable and even haram, even sinful. O unjust man nurturing rancor and enmity against the believer. Let us suppose that you were on a ship or in a house with 9 innocent people and 1 criminal. If someone were to try to make the ship sink or to set the house on fire because of that criminal, you know how great a sinner he would be. You would cry out to the heavens against his sinfulness. Even if there were 1 innocent man and 9 criminals aboard the ship, still it would be against all rules of justice to sink it. So too, if there are in the person of a believer who may be compared to a dominical dwelling, a divine ship, not 9, but as many as 20 innocent attributes, good attributes, right, such as belief, Islam, neighborliness, and if you then nurture rancor and enmity against him on account of 1 criminal attribute that harms and displeases you, attempting or desiring the sinking of his being, the burning of his house, then you too will be a criminal guilty of a great atrocity. Okay. So, yeah, let's talk about that first of all. And we'll go on from there, okay? That's actually, like, in that first paragraph there, he actually says something that's actually a principle in Islam, okay? Like, in Islam, we don't, like, we're not so utilitarian, you know? Like, if anyone's familiar with, you know, secular ethics, there's this notion of utilitarianism, right? There's this notion of, yeah, you know, the... goodness lies in the greatest, for example, right, is one understanding of it anyway, goodness lies in the greatest pleasure for the most. Like, you know, so whatever, considering us as a community, whatever on as a community, right, all things considered, gives us the most utility, the most pleasure, then that's the good. Okay. So on that kind of reasoning, what you might say is that, hey, there's a ship, yeah, there's a boat, and on that boat are 9 criminals and 1 good guy. If we sink that ship somehow, even though we're going to lose 1 good guy, right, maybe it's worth doing that because the harm that will be avoided by getting rid of 9, say, you know, serial killers, you know, maybe that justifies killing that one person. Sure, it's not good to kill an innocent. It's not good to, you know, that's a great loss. But maybe if you could somehow quantify, maybe it's a far greater loss. You know, maybe there's a far greater opportunity cost in not getting rid of these 9 serial killers, yeah? Because then those 9 serial killers are going to go out and then they're going to kill maybe 5 people each. So that's 45, right? 9 fives is 45, yeah? 45 lives lost, right? Compared to just 1 life. Come on, guys, you know, be rational. In Islam, we would say, no. You cannot kill that one guy. Regardless of how much good we think might come of it, right? We can't sacrifice the one. You know when you could sacrifice him? Only if he agreed to it, right? If he said, yeah, hey, I'm, you know, hey, guys, I found myself on a boat with 9 serial killers. They've all escaped from the, you know, from Alcatraz, okay? I picked them up, think they were swimming, and I picked them up thinking they were, you know, drowning, and they turned out to be 9 serial killers, okay? Look, if you need to, even kill me to get rid of these guys, then you're free to do so, right? If somebody spoke like that, then yes, you know, then, you know, perhaps you could do it, perhaps. But without, if you didn't agree to it, you'd be taking his haq in Islam, you know, because he's going to say, well, hang on, you haven't got the right to just take my life. You know, my life has been given to me by Allah. You haven't got the right to just take it for the sake of the pleasure that's going to be experienced by persons other than me. See, in Islam, the value accorded to the individual, you know. So relying on that principle, right, he now draws this analogy. What he's getting at here is this, right? Like, what? Let's say straight away what's going on here. Like, when I choose not to have uhuwa for my brother or sister, right? So, and this happens quite often, especially nowadays that, you know, we communicate online a lot. And, you know, when we're not face-to-face, we sort of, a lot of the, you know, sensitivities and niceties that are in play when we're face-to-face are kind of gone, you know. We're not as pleasant to one another. Yeah, we're quicker to, you know, act inappropriately when we're not face-to-face. So what happens is we hurt one another, we put one another down, especially in the context of debate, you know, and disagreement and so on. You know, we insist on being right. We hurt one another and so on, right? So, you know, but Jisman's acknowledging here, you know, like someone might have wronged you in that sort of way. Yeah, someone might have upset you online or in whatever way, you know, in whatever... It's a very broad set of ways in which someone might have genuinely done me wrong, my Muslim brother, okay? If on the basis of that wrong, I choose to fail to have uhuwa for him, all right? So I fail to value him, right, as a Muslim, all right? And we'll talk more about, you know, what that amounts to, like what's like, you know, how must I see him? If he is a believer, how must I see him? That's going to be described as we read on. But whatever that, you know, just putting aside what that means for a moment, like if I fail to value him in that particular way that's required of me, right, what I'm doing is this, right? I'm picking on a certain bad aspect of his character, right? I'm highlighting or I'm identifying a particular aspect of his character or a particular set of his actions, and I'm using that as my basis to sink the ship of this person's character, right? So that's the metaphor that's being used there. Like what it means to sink his ship, it doesn't just refer to sort of hurting this person physically, right? It'd be a mistake to think of it like that. He's not just talking about well, don't take the metaphor too literally, right? He's not just talking here about sinking someone in the sense of, you know, killing them or hurting them or whatever, okay? That's certainly one very severe way of failing to have uhuwa. It certainly is. But, yeah, that's not the only way, okay? Like, even just saying, hey, look, I don't want to know you anymore, for example. Yeah, I don't want to know you anymore. I don't count you as a friend. I don't count you as a brother. I don't want to know you. Don't talk to me. Stay away from me. All that sort of stuff. So that's not bashing him up or killing him, isn't it? But it's still going to come within the ambit of what Bedouzaman's talking about here. Okay. If I fail to have uhuwa for him in that sort of way, what I'm doing is that I'm picking on a certain set of his actions or a certain aspect of his character, and I'm overlooking everything else about him that's good, okay? So usually what happens is that, like, however in Kuwait this is, or however vaguely we do this, like, we do kind of, like... weigh somebody up before we choose to write them off, don't we? You know, we do kind of, yeah, you know, however explicitly or, you know, non-explicitly, we do kind of tend to, how can I put this, consider the pros and cons, yeah, of writing someone off, don't we? You know, like, I don't know, what if the person's also my employer, you know, or you know, we take into account, like, what we've got to lose, don't we? You know, like, yeah, what if I want to marry a sister, or, you know, or whatever, yeah, you know. This is quite natural, you know, we take into account everything about the person, you know. Like, but what we do is that this kind of weighing up, right, which is quite natural to do, Yeah, this weighing up of somebody, right? Before we choose to, you know, write the person off, we do it, but this is what I'm pointing out here, in a very unjust way, all right? If somebody has, like, I'm probably jumping ahead a little bit here, but like, if somebody has iman, right? If somebody has iman, that outweighs everything, right? The value of somebody's iman, right, is far greater than the disvalue of, you know, the standard sorts of things that we sever relationships for, put it that way, you know. So, yeah, think of the standard sorts of reasons that we sever ties with our brothers and sisters nowadays, right? You know, hey, I saw on that on Facebook, you liked so-and-so's post and so-and-so's post and so-and-so's post, but you did not like my posts. Right? I saw it. No, I saw it there. You clicked like. It's there. It's plain. Because you can see who's liked what, right? You've liked everybody's post, but you didn't like my photo of the picnic that I was having with my family or whatever, you know. So that speaks volumes. You don't respect me. You don't like me. If you don't like me, then I don't like you, right? These are the sorts of reasons why people, you know, sever ties. They literally sever ties. Or, like, even if face-to-face they might still be kind of amicable, in the heart, this is where this goes on, in the heart, there's this severance, you know. So, right, so you can make examples for yourself, all sorts, right? The standard sorts of reasons for which we choose to sever in our hearts, that tie, right? So the tie of uhuwe, really what it is, it's a tie, it's a kind of love, right? It's very much a love. It's to value a person in a certain way, right? It's, no. Yeah, before we say any more, like, let's speak for a moment about uhuwe itself, right? It's to do this, right? I see that someone is a fellow Muslim. I see that they have faith in Allah. I see that they practice the religion, right, to the best of their ability, let's say, and so on and so on. And I see that in general they try to live sincerely. They try to kind of do what's liked by Allah and avoid what's disliked. So, you know, I see all these sorts of things. I see in general that they're a worshipper, right? I observe them as a worshipper. And because of the fact that Allah loves that sort of person, right, I try my best to, as well, develop a love for them, you know. So this starts off with a certain affirmation. It starts off with just, like, adopting, like, as true, a certain proposition that this person has great, great value, right? Like, look at the value of the believer, okay? The value of the person of iman is like this, right? Someone might have committed, I don't know, 10 murders, right? Someone might have committed 10 murders and maybe they're going to get punished for a long time for that. But in the fullness of time, this person is going to go to Jannah for all eternity. That's what they are in Allah's view. In Allah's view, the person, even if he's committed 10 murders, he's someone who, so long as he's got that mustard seeds worth of faith still in his heart, right? So long as he doesn't lack iman, in other words, right? However little his, however weak his faith vis-a-vis, you know, others, if he's got faith, Allah's going to put him in Jannah for all eternity. That's the extent to which Allah values him. That's the extent to which Allah values iman, okay? So most of us don't commit 10 murders or any murders, right? Most of us don't commit crimes. Most of us don't, you know, generally, you know, we're law-abiding citizens, aren't we, right? Generally, we try to do our best, okay? You know, I mean, like, the people who, you know, overtly or deliberately do wrong, you know, and end up in jail and stuff like that, whatever, they're generally in the minority, right? They're generally in the minority, okay? Most of us, you know, we try our best to do our best most of the time, okay? So if someone's like that, right, if someone's got faith and is generally trying his hardest to do his best, there's a fair chance, there's a fair likelihood that this person is going to go to Jannah without any punishment, without any Jahannam, We've spoken about this on a number of occasions in the past, you know. Like, you know, whoever says the Ayatul Kursi after every far salah is going to go to Jannah, for example, right? And there are many, many excuses that Allah uses just to, you know, give you, in a sense, like a free pass straight into Jannah. If you've got your faith and you've got your worship and generally you do your best, and when you do wrong, you make a tawbah for it, yeah? You're a person of great, great value in Allah's view. You're quite beloved by Allah, okay? You're quite beloved by Allah, and it's as a result of that, it's because of His raza, His pleasure with you, that you're going to be in Jannah for all eternity, inshallah. And indeed, there's going to come a point when the believer is going to Jannah. There's literally going to come a point where Allah's going to bring you to His presence, and He's going to ask you if you're pleased with what He's given you. Yeah, you probably read the hadith, right? He's going to ask you if you're pleased with what He's given you. He's then going to give you more on top, right? And then He's going to say to you, I'm going to give you something now even better than that, right? So you've already now had the ru'yatullah even. You've already had the beatific vision of Allah. But on top of that, He's going to give you still one more inestimable, invaluable gift. And that is His raza. He's going to say, from this moment onwards, I'll never be displeased with you. You have my pleasure, you have my raza for all eternity. So that's the view of a believer in Allah's sight. Okay. The person who fails to have an uhuwa for someone, the person who says, no, you are not worth my affection. I mean, at bottom, that's what it is to be a friend with someone, right? To be friends with somebody is to have a bond of mutual affection. Yeah, if you look it up in the dictionary, it's going to say something along those lines. It's a bond of mutual affection. Right? Yeah, we both like each other, you know, as friends. Right? We both like each other, you know. We see, which means to say that we see good in each other, yeah? We see good in each other. That's just what a friend is. So you can imagine now, like, uhuwa, right? The relation between brothers, right? It's not merely that we see good in one another. We see great good in one another. We see good in one another to such a degree that it warrants nothing short of love. Right? It's, and don't limit love to just romantic love, guys, you know. Yeah, romance, it's fleeting, in this life at least. It's quite fleeting, all right? Love is actually something more substantial than that. You know, it's to, yeah, really see the value in someone and to respect them and to have what Bediziman refers to elsewhere as a compassion, a shawkat for them, you know. Which expects nothing in return. It doesn't even care if it's loved back, you know. Uhuwa encompasses all these sorts of things, you know. It's to see the value in someone's status as a worshipper, their status as a believer, right? To have a shawkat, to have a love, to have a respect for them in accordance with that. To what degree? In accordance with the, however valuable iman is in Allah's view. Okay, because why do you have uhuwa? Why do you have friendship or love or anything like that? If it's not for Allah's sake, it has no value. Okay, if I love somebody, I love them because Allah has commanded that love. Like Allah sees that love as appropriate. You know, and it's not to give to everybody, right? It's not for everybody. It's not for the kafir, for example. It's not for the person who deliberately covers up the truth, right? Which is what the kafir is. For Allah's sake, yeah, we choose to develop love for this person and to treat that person in accordance with that. A love, a shawkat, a respect, a valuing in all kinds of ways. Okay, so the person who fails to have this, generally what he's doing is that he's taking certain sets of actions that the person's done or certain aspects of his character. Yeah, generally he's good, but let's say, you know, yeah, generally he's good. Like he gives his zakat and stuff like that. But when we go to restaurants, he always waits for me to pay first. Yeah, let's pretend. Right? And I view that as a sort of stinginess. Maybe little did I know that he's like undergoing like extreme financial difficulty, but he's just, you know, too proud, you know, or, you know, too well-mannered to kind of make a fuss about that. Allahu alim, right? But I'd take that kind of in what in my view is the stinginess, and maybe I treat that as a reason to fail to have a huwa for him, you know, to fail to value him to the extent that Allah requires, you know. I feel that he's not respected me as much as he respects others. Yeah, he or she has liked someone else's post, but never likes my post. And so on and so on, you know. We take things, right, that affect us personally, and we accord them a great weight because they affect us personally. And we set aside other things that actually have far greater value. So what we end up doing is, it's very much like sinking that ship. Like, you know, there's one, there are 9 innocent people on board that ship and there's one bad guy, right? We're sinking that ship because of that one bad guy, but hang on, you're losing 9 good people. So that's what we're doing. We're sinking the ship of this person's character. We're in our hearts, at least, whether or not we verbalize this, right? Whether or not we say it expressly or explicitly, what we're doing is that, we are overlooking things that are extremely valuable about the person in favor of something that is in reality quite minor. Right? But to us, it's quite major. To us, it's quite major because we're personally hurt by it. So in a nutshell, that's what's going on. Like, that is the, first and foremost thing to take into account. Like, if you fail to have a huwa for someone, generally what we're doing is that we're overlooking, things that we shouldn't overlook, you know, things that are far more valuable than the one or two little things about the person's character that affect us personally, okay? Let's go on. The second aspect. So what we're talking about here again, dispute and discord, right? A lack of a huwa. Dispute and discord among believers, partisanship, obstinacy, envy, rancor, enmity, right? They are harmful. And they are, now the second aspect, they are also sinful in the view of wisdom. For it is obvious that enmity and love are opposites, just like light and darkness. While maintaining their respective essences, they cannot be combined. If love is truly found in a heart, by virtue of the predomination of the causes that produce it, then enmity in that heart can only be metaphorical and takes on the form of compassion. The believer loves and should love his brother and sister and is pained by any evil he sees in him. He attempts to reform him, not with harshness, but gently. It is for this reason that the hadith of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam says, no believer should be angered with another and cease speaking to him for more than 3 days. If the causes that produce enmity predominate and true enmity takes up its seat in a heart, then the love in that heart will become metaphorical. Right? So it won't be a true love. Right? It'll be a fake love, a metaphorical love, and takes on the form of artifice, right? Pretending and flattery. O unjust man, see now what a great sin is rancor and enmity toward a brother or sister believer. If you were to say that ordinary small stones are more valuable than the Kaaba, and greater than Mount Uhud, it would be an ugly absurdity. So too, so now he's going to reiterate some of what we just spoke about, right? So too, belief, which has the value of the Kaaba, and Islam, which has the splendor of Mount Uhud, as well as other Islamic attributes, right? All these, they demand love and concord, right? Agreement, togetherness. But if you prefer to belief and Islam certain shortcomings which arouse hostility, but in reality are like the small stones, you too will be engaging in great injustice, foolishness, and sin. Right? So it's literally haram. Okay? It's literally haram. Right? So to overlook someone's iman, right, and on the basis of one or two small things, to fail to have a huwa for them, it's literally haram. It's an injustice. It's foolishness. The unity of belief necessitates also the unity of hearts, and the oneness of our creed, our aqidah, demands the oneness of our society. You cannot deny that if you find yourself in the same regiment, right, so if you're in the army, and you find yourself in the same regiment as someone, you will form a friendly attachment to him. A brotherly relation will come into being as a result of your both being submitted to the orders of a single commander. You will similarly experience a fraternal relation through living in the same town with someone. Okay, so just as, well, that's true. Now, similarly, there are ties of unity, bonds of union, and relations of fraternity as numerous as the divine names that are shown and demonstrated to you by the light and consciousness of belief. Right? Okay, so what he's pointing to here, right, before I go on, right, Iman is kind of nur, right? It's literally a kind of nur. And this kind of nur, it demands unity. Right? It demands unity among the believers. Why does it demand unity? Like, what are the points of, like when do we have a union with someone? Like, you know, like if I barrack for the same football team as someone, you know, I take them to be my friend in many contexts, don't I? Right? But now what we're talking about is something far greater than that. You know, I don't merely live in the same town as someone or barrack for the same team as them or go to the same school as them, right? Rather, there are a whole set of things, but there is a whole set of things that are one and the same for us, right? Now he's going to set these out. Your creator, owner, and object of worship, and your provider, right? Allah, is one and the same for both of you. Thousands of things are one and the same for you. Your prophet, peace be upon him, your religion, your qibla, right, the direction in which you pray, right, are one and the same. Hundreds of things are one and the same for you. Then too, your village is one, your state is one, your country is one, tens of things are one and the same for you. All of these things held in common dictate oneness and unity, union and concord, love and brotherhood. And indeed, the cosmos and the planets are similarly interlinked by unseen chains. If despite all this, you prefer things worthless and transient as a spider's web that give rise to dispute and discord, right? If you prefer them to rancor and enmity and engage in true enmity toward a believer, then you will understand, unless your heart is dead and your intelligence extinguished, you will understand how great is your disrespect for that bond of unity, your slight to that relation of love, your transgression against that tie of brotherhood. I'll skip the next one. Here he talks about, so do read this in your own time. He talks next about, like, often what happens, there's a situation where if I dislike one person, in virtue of disliking him, in virtue of like hating him or having a lack of uhuwa for him, I also harbour similar feelings for whoever's associated with him. For example, his brother. Or like maybe here's a more common example. Right? Here's a common example. Right? Later when you guys, inshallah, get married, right, you're going to see, right, your husband, right, let's say has a fight, has a dispute with a brother, right? So your family friends, let's say, yeah, right? So your family friends, as a result of being family friends, right? Now your children are friends, generally the wives are friends. But then what happens, right? Either the wives have a fight, or the husbands have a fight with one another. I hate to say, often it's more often the wives, they have a fight with one another, from my experience, sorry to say, yeah. You know, they have a dispute, you know, because, you know, you didn't respond to my message, you know, and you didn't this and you didn't that, you know, yeah, you clicked like for my children's photos, but you clicked love for their children's photos, you know, and women are hurt by this, right, you know, so they fall out. And then what happens, yeah, because my wife dislikes someone, now I sever ties with her husband. All right, so he talks about that. I think we see the folly in that. Yeah, we see the folly in that. But do read that in your own time. But Bedouzaman includes this here because these are the problems that were manifesting at the time of writing, you know. This is what he saw happening all the time. So, you know, he doesn't include it in vain, right? Okay, next one. Yeah, okay, I'm going to read this fourth one, yeah, because this one's important. Yeah, this one's super important, yeah. Fourth aspect, right? And this will be the last one that we read, okay? It is a sin, right? So rancor and enmity, right? Lack of uhuwa between brothers and sisters. It is a sin from the point of view of personal life. Listen to the following four principles, which are the base of this fourth aspect. First principle. When you know your way and opinions to be true, this is so relevant to our times, right? When you know your way and opinions to be true, you have the right to say, my way is right and the best. But you do not have the right to say, only my way is right. According to the sense of, I think he's translated this from the Arabic, the eye of contentment is too dim to perceive faults. It is the eye of anger that exhibits all vice. So according to the meaning of that saying, your unjust view and distorted opinion cannot be the all-decisive judge and cannot condemn the belief of another as invalid. Right? So the opinions of others, right? Yeah, so be respectful of others' opinions, basically is what he's getting at here for the time being. I mean, you can be 100% sure that your view is correct, but and you can say, hey, you know, this particular way of thinking is the best on this particular topic, but you got to be, and this is very much the sunnah, this is very much the way of the pious predecessors. That's why we're the Ahlul Sunnah wal Jama'ah, the Jama'ah in that, Ahlul Sunnah wal Jama'ah, it refers to quite explicitly the difference in opinion, right, among the believers, right? Different schools of jurisprudence and so on, yeah? Sometimes in our religion, two contradictory positions are both considered correct, you know? If it's a matter of ikhtilaf, right, you know, if there's no ijma on it, if there's no consensus on it, yeah, often there is room in our religion for opinions that are polar opposites, you know? And there are many examples of it. So based on that principle, don't just insist that your view is the only correct view. You might see that it's, you know, very good, but yeah, be open to the notion that his view, even though it's the opposite of your view, that too could have a lot of merit, okay? Because these are the sorts of things that lead us to rancor and enmity, right? This kind of disputation. Okay, so second principle. It is your right that all that you say should be true, right? So this is what falls to you, right? Everything that comes out of your mouth should be true. However, it's not your right that you should say all that is true. So you haven't got the right to speak every truth, yeah? You should never lie, but that doesn't mean that you've got the right to speak every truth, yeah? Some things to be kept quiet. For one of insincere intention may sometimes take unkindly to advice and react against it unfavorably. Third principle, right? And this is particularly important. Right? If you wish to nourish enmity, right? If you want to hate anyone at all or hate anything at all or dislike anything, then dislike, right? What? This, right? Direct your enmity against the enmity in your own heart, in your own qalb, and attempt to rid yourself of it. Be an enemy to your evil commanding soul, to your nafs al-ammara, and its caprice, and attempt to reform it, for it inflicts more harm on you than all else. Do not engage in enmity against other believers on account of that injurious nafs of yours. Again, if you wish to cherish enmity, there are unbelievers and atheists in great abundance. Be hostile to them. So what is he talking about there? Be hostile to their kufr, right? Right, doesn't mean we'll go around and bash them up and stuff. Talk about that, right? Saying like, you know, yeah, what's the minimum expected of us, right? Like, you've got to either change something with your hand, yeah, who's heard the hadith, right? If there's injustice, and what greater injustice can there be than kufr, right? If there's injustice, you're obliged to either fix it with your hand, if you can, right? As in physically fix it, if it's possible. Or otherwise, respond to it at least verbally. I might be skipping one or two here, right? You've got to otherwise respond to it verbally, or if you can't even do that, then at least in your heart, you got to oppose it. You got to at least dislike it, you know. All right, so based on that, if there are atheists out there, if you want to have enmity for them, yeah, have enmity. If you want to have enmity at all, have enmity for the unbelievers and atheists. Like, in other words, like, in your heart, oppose the unbelief, right? Say, like, don't just, don't take it lightly. Like, it's an ugly thing, okay? And we'll actually speak separately about this too, because it's one of the reasons, like, why some people accuse divine justice. Like, some people wonder, like, how it is that it can be just for, and I think we might have spoken about it in not so long ago, but how can someone go to hell forever just for kufr? Yeah, just for kufr? Well, kufr is an enormously ugly thing. Okay, if you want to have enmity for something, if you want to hate something, hate kufr. It's an ugly injustice, because it is to deliberately cover up the truth, you know, and it is to devalue every single thing in the universe. We spoke about that in the past, and we'll set it aside for now, okay? In the same way that the attribute of love is fit to receive love as its response, so too enmity will receive enmity as its own fitting response. If you wish to defeat your enemy, then respond to his evil with good. For if you respond with evil, enmity will increase. And even though he will be outwardly defeated, he will nurture hatred in his heart and hostility will persist. But if you respond to him with good, he will repent and become your friend. The meaning of the lines, if you treat the noble nobly, he will be yours. And if you treat the vile nobly, he will revolt. So in accordance with that saying, right? Yeah, so the meaning of that saying, right, is that it is the mark of the believer to be noble, and he will become submitted to you by noble treatment. And even if someone is apparently ignoble, he is noble with respect to his belief. It often happens that if you tell an evil man, you are good, he will become good. And if you tell a good man, you are bad, he will become bad. Hearken, therefore, to these sacred principles of the Quran, for happiness and safety are to be found in them. Okay, so now there's the verse that he's talking about, rendered here in English as follows. If they pass by futility, they pass by it in honourable disdain. If you forgive, pardon and relent, verily Allah is all relenting, merciful. Fourth principle. Those who cherish rancor and enmity transgress against their own souls, their brother or sister believer, and divine mercy. For such a person condemns his soul to painful torment with his rancor and enmity. He imposes torment on his soul whenever his enemy receives some bounty and pain from fear of him. If his enmity arises from envy, right, hasad, then it is the most severe form of torment. For envy, in the first place, consumes and destroys the envier, and its harm for the one envied is either slight or non-existent. Okay. I'm going to set aside the discussion of envy, of hasad, because that deserves a discussion like on its own separately. I wouldn't be giving it justice just by passing over it quickly. So I'm going to skip that. I want to just jump forward just to this last little section, this last part of this fourth aspect. All right. Right, so this is like what we need to, this is our take-home message here, okay? Here's a take-home message for us. You cannot condemn a brother or sister believer for some evil that you experience at his or her hand for the following reasons, okay? So this is going to encapsulate nicely, right, everything. Right, so these are why, so like, you know, we've already spoken about one reason, so going back now, right? Right at the start, like we spoke about what we end up doing, like, you know, metaphysically speaking, right, spiritually speaking, like what do we end up doing when we dislike our fellow believer? We overlook the value that Allah sees in them, right? We overlook the value of the iman, right? Which far outweighs the disvalue of whatever it is that they've done to me, whatever aspects of their character pertain to me, right? So we've already spoken about that, but in addition to that now, there is a set of reasons, right? Why I cannot, right? So not only that, but also further to that, all of these reasons why I cannot condemn, right, or write off the character of a brother believer due to some evil that I experience at his or her hand. Firstly, qadr, right, divine determining, qadr and qadar, divine determining and decree, have a share of responsibility. It is necessary to deduct that share from the total and respond to it with contentment and satisfaction. Secondly, the share of the nafs and Satan, right, shaitan, should also be deducted, and one should pity the person for having been overcome by his nafs and await his repentance instead of becoming his enemy. Thirdly, look at the defect in your own nafs that you do not see or do not wish to see. Deduct the share for that too. As for the small share which then remains, if you respond with forgiveness, pardon, and magnanimity in such a way as to conquer your enemy swiftly and safely, then you will have escaped all sin. Again, we're doing haram here. We failed to have a huwa, we're doing haram. You will have escaped all sin and harm. But if, like some drunken and crazed person, who buys up fragments of glass and ice as if they were diamonds, you respond to worthless, transient, temporary, and insignificant happenings of this world with violent enmity, permanent rancor, and perpetual hostility, as if you were going to remain in the world with your enemy for all eternity, it would be extreme transgression, sinfulness, drunkenness, and lunacy. If then you love yourself, do not permit this harmful hostility and desire for revenge to enter your heart. If it has entered your heart, do not listen to what it says. Hear what truth-seeking Hafiz of Shiraz says. The world is not a commodity worth arguing over. It is worthless. Right? Why? Why is the world worthless? For no other reason than this. It is worthless since it is transient and passing. If this is true of the world, then it is clear how worthless and insignificant are the petty affairs of the world, right? So the affairs of the world just being a subset of the world itself, right? With all its planets and stars and trees and animals, right? The petty affairs of the world. Hafiz also said, the tranquility of both worlds lies in the understanding of these two words. Generosity towards friends, forbearance towards enemies. Okay, he goes on there for some time, you know, the next bit, you know, just read it in your own time, but he talks about this. I have no choice. There is enmity within my disposition. I cannot overlook those who antagonize me. Like, you know, in other words, it's just kind of part of who I am, you know. It's kind of quite, yeah, fitri for me, right? You know, it's just one that's easily hurt, easily offended. You know, and he goes on to respond to that. Then he goes on, there's yet a fifth aspect. It goes on for some, yeah, a few more pages. Then there's even a sixth aspect. Yeah, it goes on for a few more pages. But, yeah, do read. So we've been reading here the 22nd letter from Bediüzzaman Said Nursi's letters collection. 22nd letter, first topic, yeah. So let's just say a few words just to finish off about that last bit that we read. So what's going on here? He's asking us to, find reasons not to have this rancor, not to have this disdain or this lack of uhuwa for your fellow believer. Right? He's giving us ways to kind of deal with it psychologically, in a sense, you know, to deal with it psychologically. Because he knows it's difficult to do this, right? Because it's a matter of the heart. You know? It's a matter of the heart and all the nafs. So he's pointing out certain truths, right? So he's happily admitting here that the person that you're disliking has indeed wronged you. I mean, so we're not even talking about that set of situations where we dislike someone unjustly, right? They've not done anything at all wrong to us, right? That often happens too, you know. But ask anybody who dislikes a fellow believer and he's going to insist that, no, he's not in that category, you know. He's going to say, no, I'm quite justified in my dislike for this person, right? Just that's generally going to be the view. So he's saying, okay, let's say that you are justified. Let's say that he has genuinely wronged you. He's genuinely wronged you, yeah? Well, then do this, right? First things first, deduct a share, right, of the blame, right? So he's done something wrong to me. Deduct a share of the blame, right? It's not that we're blaming Qadir. That's not the right expression. We're just deducting a share of blameworthiness from the person, right? So, you know, if we could quantify, let's say, the person's blameworthiness for the thing that he's done wrong to me, yeah, I'm to just deduct some from that for what? For Qadir. Why? Because ultimately, like, if the pen of Qadir, right, well, in other words, right, if Allah in his infinite wisdom, because, yeah, that's the pen of Qadir writes, right, because it's commanded to write by Allah, and it's written with perfect wisdom, perfect mercy, perfect compassion, and in fact with all of Allah's names and attributes, right? You know, the book of Qadr is written as a manifestation of all of Allah's names and attributes. Allah has basically ordered events in this world in such a way as to best carry out the purposes for which he has created it. Yeah. So every single event that occurs, however insignificant you think it is, however trivial, or however hurtful, however painful, or however good and beautiful, right? No matter what has happened to you in your daily life or in your whole life, whatever has happened to you, Allah has selected that from, as Bedouzman puts it elsewhere, from a sea of infinite possibilities. Allah could have written Qadr in an infinite variety of ways. But he has chosen a particular Qadr for each of us. He's written the Qadr for the whole universe, but within that, each of our lives, right, have been fine-tuned to an infinite degree to best fulfill, to best achieve the purpose for which Allah has created both the world and us in it. Okay, and we've spoken about this on many occasions, but like, why has Allah created us? He's created us to worship him, which means to say that we've been created to come to basically know divine beauty. We've been created to come to know and appreciate and then respond as is required, right, to all the different varieties of divine beauty that are manifested in every event and everything in this world. Okay, and that goes to even Jannah. Even Jannah, even in Jahannam, right? Even in Jahannam, Allah's names and attributes are manifesting. Allah doesn't do any wrong by
creating Jahannam.
In fact, it's created to manifest, for example, his adala, his justice, and so on, you know, and various other Jalali names, right? So Allah has created the entire created realm, not just this universe, but the entire created realm, right, to manifest his beauty and to make it known to other conscious observers. So if he has chosen, for example, on a certain day to bring it about that you don't achieve what you'd plan to achieve, right? Yeah, you know, you plan to get to a certain location at a certain time, let's pretend, and you don't get there, right? But you were going there to do something good, let's say. You think it was good for you to get there at that time, or you think it was good for you to do that thing, or to get that job, or to marry that person, or to buy that house. You know, you think that these things were good for you, but Allah knows, right, what will best bring about the achievement of the purposes for which he's created you. Right, what's going to bring the best out of you as a worshipper? All things considered. Right? See, the thing is that Allah knows all truths. I mean, to say that Allah is al-alim is to say that he has absolute knowledge. It's to say that his knowledge is qualitatively perfect. It has no defect or limitation. There are no truths that he fails to know. So, for example, right, what would a certain free-willed being do in some hypothetical situation? Yeah, Allah knows the answer to that. So let's say, for example, what if I did get to my location on time? You know, would on balance, right, all things considered, would I have worshipped better or worse? Yeah, you know, maybe, yeah, maybe if I had got there on time, yeah, you know, I was going to run into a certain person and I was going to get talking to that person, and then as a result of that, you know, I was only going to pray the Fardhs and not the Sunnah. Allah Alim, right? We don't know. See, we don't know the answers to these hypothetical questions, but Allah knows. Allah knows exactly what would have happened if some hypothetical scenario had have eventuated. And there are examples of it, like it's mentioned in the Quran, right? Yeah, there are many examples of it, like, you know, where Allah manifests that he Allah tells us he has this sort of knowledge. As the Christians put it, like, Allah knows, how did I put it, the counterfactuals of creaturely freedom. It's like a technical theological term that the Christians use. He knows what free-willed beings would do in hypothetical scenarios, basically, you know. So, given that he knows all truths, including even what we would do in hypothetical situations, now, see, he can exactly fine-tune your qadr. He can give you that qadr which is going to bring the best out of you. Because he knows that had you have been born at a different time or to different persons or had a slightly different qadr in any way, that on balance, yeah, you would not have done well. Or, you know, at best, you would have done only equally as well. All right. So, if Allah brings it about that a certain brother or sister hurts me in a certain way on a certain day, if Allah has allowed that, right? I mean, that couldn't have happened if Allah didn't allow, first of all, know that. It could not have happened if Allah did not allow it. Yeah. If Allah has allowed that, he's allowed it like with perfect wisdom, perfect mercy, perfect compassion. You know, it's all the difficulties, all the hardships that we experience that enable us to rise through the ranks of Kamala, rise through the ranks of maturity, gain stations that we couldn't otherwise have gained vis-a-vis Allah. Okay. Generally, it's not our good deeds. It's not through deeds, you know, that we achieve as much. Like, generally, we achieve a lot more through this sort of negative worship, right? Not this worship in the positive sense of actually, you know, doing actions, right? There's this worship in the negative sense of undergoing difficulty, undergoing exertion, undergoing pain, being hurt in certain ways, right? In general, our weakness and poverty, our being ajiz and fakir, that is what brings the best out of us as worshippers. All right? So it's for that reason that, in general, yeah, for any given hardship that you experience, you know that it's for that reason in general. We don't know maybe in a very fine-tuned way why did Allah make me undergo that particular difficulty at that particular time. We won't know that in a fine-grained way here and now. But in general, we know that difficulty is the thing through which we mature, the thing through which we grow, as you know, spiritually speaking. So, Bediüzzaman's telling us to take that into account here. All right. Yeah, sure, your brother or sister has hurt you, but at the same time, it's been allowed by Qadr. All right. It's not all bad. He shouldn't have done it. Like, don't get me wrong. That's not to say that he shouldn't have done it. That's not to say that, hey, if hardship's good, let's go around and cause as much trouble for people as possible. No, don't do that. Allah has fine-tuned himself the exact degree of hardship that's good for you. Right? It says in the Quran, Allah does not burden us with greater than that which we can carry, you know. He has, in a very fine-tuned way, he's titrated the difficulty that you're going to undergo. Right? So, yeah, you know, some brother or sister hurting you is what is within the ambit of that. Right? It's part and parcel of that. So deduct the share for that. Right? In other words, take into account that, hey, this is actually, you know, in a way, it's hurtful, but it's good for my growth. You know, ultimately, it's good for my growth. And, you know, really, I should be thankful for it. If only I knew. Right? I mean, come the day of judgment, you know, when you've done all these misdeeds and they're being weighed on the scales on the day of judgment, right? And they're weighed with perfect exactitude, right? You're going to really, you know what, you're going to wish that you had have suffered more. You're going to wish you had have suffered more because it's that suffering that's going to counterbalance that, you know. All right, so that's what he's talking about there, right? Also deduct the share for the nafs, right? And for Satan, right? So, yeah, how are we going for time here? Yeah, I'll finish off very quickly now, yeah. So don't forget, right, the person, right, they've done this, like partly, why have they done this? We should assume that they've done it due to their nafs. Like, don't assume that, don't just jump to assume that their heart is corrupt, right? It could be that the heart is still beautiful, right? So this is the husn zan that we should have, right? The heart is still good, right? Yes, the person is still a beautiful person and they still respect me, they still care for me, but their nafs probably overcame them, you know. If my brother was stingy to me, let's say, it's probably because his nafs got the better of him and, you know, made him feel like, hey, he's broken even though he's not, and, you know, even though he's, you know, twice as rich as me, you know, his nafs made him, you know, like... To have a nafs is just to have these sorts of feelings. That's what it means to have a nafs al-ammara, right? It's to feel these sorts of feelings. And he has been given that, like he's been created in that way by Allah, because, again, like the nafs is something to battle against, and it's that battle, it's through that battle, through that exertion, that again we rise through the ranks of maturity. So it's good that he has that, and he needs to battle it, and every now and again he's going to, of course, fall victim to it. It wouldn't be much of a nafs if it couldn't do that. All right. If it never presented such difficulty to him that he was overcome by it, then, yeah, I mean, that wouldn't be a very, it wouldn't be a very useful nafs, right? The nafs is useful because it is the sort of thing that indeed makes you do wrong from time to time. Yeah, you know, you can't always beat it. Well, let me put it that way. You can't always beat your nafs. All right. So, seeing as though the nafs can't always be beaten, right? I mean, we're going to sin. Yeah. Allah says if we didn't sin, He would have created a new bunch of people that would have sinned, and then He would have forgiven them. You know, a new bunch of people that would have sinned and made tawbah, and He would have accepted their tawbah. Yeah, you've all heard the expression. All right, so take that into account. The guy has got a nafs, right? And the nafs makes you do those sorts of things. And the nafs is guided by shaitan, right? We spoke about it a few weeks ago. Yeah, every time we get the idea to do something bad, the idea is coming from, right? It's satanic. It's coming from a Satan. And that Satan can take into account your desires. And based on your desires, based on your nafs, you know, he can give you a certain idea. Hey, you know, do this bad thing to your brother. And every now and again, you're going to fall victim to that. Take into account this person's makeup, right? And the fact that there are free-willed satanic beings floating around out there that can encourage us to do wrong. Take that into account. What does he say? Thirdly, yeah, take into account your own nafs, right? Yeah, don't forget you too. You've got a nafs too, and you do wrong too. Don't think that you're so perfect, right? And as for the, finally, right, let's finish on this point. As for the small share which then remains, what should you do with that small share? If you respond with forgiveness, pardon, magnanimity, in such a way as to conquer your enemy swiftly and safely, then you will have escaped all sin and harm, right? So I think that's self-explanatory. Let me just remind you guys of one last little thing. On the day of judgment, our forgivingness, right, is really going to come in handy. Like, there are many hadiths about it. Prophet Siddiq's not here. The other brother? I forget his name. If he was here, he'd be able to tell us the hadith word for word. Someone might be able to remember it. But, there are many hadiths to the effect that, right, whoever forgives, right, whoever acts in a forgiving way, you can expect Allah's forgiveness, right? Expect to be treated by Allah, right, in a way similar to how you treat people, yeah? So if you... respond, yes, someone has genuinely wronged me, but I respond with forgivingness, then I can look forward to Allah's forgiveness on the Day of Judgment. Yeah, there are many hadiths about it. Subhanaka la ilma lana illa ma'allamtana innaka antal alim al-hakim. Ala rasulina salawat wa salli ala sayyidina Muhammad lillah al-fatiha. Bismillah. Jazakallah khair. Thanks for coming and listening, guys. I appreciate it. Thanks so much. Yeah.